Welcome to Quinn's Empowerment Hour on the BBS Radio Network, hosted by Quinn Lay Erickson, psychotherapist, life coach, and inspirational speaker. Quinn's experience as a blind woman, a boat person from Vietnam, and a refugee has driven her to realize her dream to help you to become the best that you can be. So join Quinn every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, for an hour of insight and inspiration for your heart, your spirit, and your soul. Good evening. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour with Quinn Lay Erickson. Thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight, we are going to talk about a topic that I'm not too crazy about, given that I've just been recently married. However, it's a very important topic because it happens too common nowadays in our society. We are going to be talking about the impact of divorce. Specifically, what are some of the considerations that you can keep in mind if you are thinking about divorce or going through a divorce yourself? So first, I will share with you a clip that contains 10 tips for divorce. And here is the clip.
Divorcing Divas offers our top 10 tips to those of you going through this experience. We hope these are helpful to you. Tip number one, don't panic. Everything's always okay in the end. If it isn't okay, it isn't the end. Tip number two, take 4 steps forward. Those steps are talk to an attorney, a financial planner, a realtor, and a psychologist. Those 4 people can help you to start moving forward. Tip number 3, surround yourself with supportive friends and family. In adverse situations, you often find out who your best friends are, and sometimes you find out who your friends aren't. It's important to weed out the people that are not supportive of you. Tip number 4, realize that your life will never be the same. But that doesn't mean that you can't have a good life, a fulfilling life, a better life than you had before. Number 5, research all of the possibilities. Read books, talk to psychologists, get on the internet, and find out all the facts of the things that you need to know to help your life move forward. Number 6, do something special for yourself. Treat yourself to a massage, take a little day trip somewhere, go out to lunch with some friends that you haven't seen for a while, but do something to pamper yourself. Number 7, don't beat yourself up. Ask yourself instead the question, what was I supposed to learn from this marriage, and how might I do things differently in the future? Number 8, remember, you are the source of your happiness. No one can make you happy, so you need to march forward and learn to do the things that will bring joy and love and laughter into your life. Number 9, learn to forgive. Possibly talk to a psychologist, read some books on forgiveness, get some tapes on forgiveness. But the sooner you can learn to forgive, the sooner you can get on with your life. And number 10, most important tip of all for divorcing divas, don't forget to laugh.
Tonight, I have invited a guest on the show to talk about divorce. Her name is Chastity Karpiuk, and she is a registered clinical counselor who has been working in the mental health field since early 2000s. Her clinical work is with adults, families, and couples who face various challenges in their lives. Chastity is currently enrolled at the Adler University in Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada, and she is completing a doctoral program in clinical psychology, and her current research topic is divorce. So she will share with us what she've learned so far about divorce. Her website is buildingstrengths.ca, and here is Chastity Karpiuk. What can you tell us, Jesse, about the current trends of marriage and divorce, Canadian trends?
Well, there is an interesting thing that has happened, and that is there was a discontinuation of the 2011, that was the last census, and so we don't have any current data right as of now, but my data is according to the 2011 census. So there's been an increase of people that have never been married, and I'm sure in terms of experience, you have experienced, the listeners have experienced, living in a common law relationship has gone up, and also divorced and separated has gone up. Those individuals, while you in the past you would have seen people stay together for quite a long time, there's a huge increase of people that are getting divorced, 50 plus, which is another interesting piece of information to work with, especially in terms of divorce mediation, because that's kind of at the time where a lot of the children go back to school and such. So the empty nest kind of kicks in, I think, although I don't know, I'm just speculating. There's also an increase in stem families and in same-sex couples. So that's really interesting because the step families had never been measured before. So 2011 was the first year it was measured. And yeah, there's 12.6% step families and 87.4% intact families. So yeah, there's just a lot of interesting information. There's also been a decrease in the family structures. The individuals that identify the primary family structures as including married couples, and also there's been a decrease in getting married earlier in life. So yeah, just I guess keep that in mind. I mean, there it's every I guess generation has some things that go on within their generation that affect a number of things, and this is the information that we're working with that affect how we're working with divorce and with mediation and with helping families and individuals go through and come out, hopefully not completely scathed.
What are some of the effects of divorce on families?
Well, there's definitely difficulties between the partners that are divorcing, and often there's fighting or difficulties at school with children and friends and stuff. So a lot of times they'll be getting into more trouble at school during these times. The parent-child relationship sometimes gets damaged, and by that I mean if one parent is talking about the other parent, it can really affect how the child takes the divorce and what the effect is of the divorce. So that's one of the things that is influential.
The relationship between the man and the woman, I guess husband and wife, can be quite a lot of tension, right? And then the also can affect the relationship between the parents and the children. And I saw this a lot. I used to work with in abuse. And that was one of the things I really noticed because there was a lot of fighting. So it was really hard for the children to witness. And a lot of the time, parents really bring in a lot of their own emotional issues into the divorce. And that hasn't really an impact on the children, I noticed.
Absolutely. They find in the research as well, and I'm just citing research just to give a basis on which to for how best to have a discussion, because sometimes I think there is a lot of people with a lot of opinions on various radio shows and pop culture and that sort of thing. I just wanted the listeners to know that there is research backing up what we're saying, and perhaps that might be even more helpful for them to be able to cope with the situations they are in.
Are there only negative consequences for divorce? Are there any positive aspects of divorce?
Yes, that's really interesting, actually. There isn't a lot of research around positive aspects of divorce. However, there is a couple things that are popping up in the research, I guess, sort of recently. Hopefully, there'll be a lot more. And one is the stress hypothesis theory. Mm-hmm. And what that is that it's a theory in which the stress of having a family in a unit that's not getting along is more stressful than the divorce itself. So actually, the divorce is a stress relief in and of itself. Mm-hmm. So there is some data to back that up, but it's not where we'd like to be, but that's one piece I just thought was quite interesting. And also, there's some research coming out about something called post-traumatic growth. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, it sounds, instead of post-traumatic stress or trauma, it's growth that comes from divorce. And I think a lot of us can if you've been from a divorce family or you've been around a divorce family for a long period of time, I'm sure most of our listeners, could think back of a positive quality that came out of the experience. Yeah. And that's really what they're trying to measure.
Yeah, and like you said, especially if there was a lot of, or if there has been a lot of tension in the family, and even domestic violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there was addiction in the family. One of the parents, and so that could create a lot of stress and tension.
Absolutely.
And what do you know, but what does it do to children's stress response system?
Well, it's not good. There is some brain research that has had a quite a big amount of attention given to it, and that is of which the prefrontal cortex, which is the area of the brain that's the planner, the organizer, basically like higher level thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that basically shuts down when a child is under a great amount of stress.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine that it might be very difficult to function in school regularly when that part of their brain isn't able to work. It's not able to function. The areas that are more primitive, the ones that are more to do with biological, hereditary history. I'm sorry, I'm thinking of how there's a book called Waking the Tiger, and it talks a lot about this. I'm kind of jumping around a little bit with this, but essentially only the necessary functions of the brain are activated, because the brain doesn't know the difference between pretend stress and stress like a bear was going to attack you. So all it does, we've got a lot of years behind us developing our brains, and what happens is that fight, flight, or freeze response happens for children, and often for parents as well, and they are not able to do well, and their emotions are either quite high, or we often see that they are experiencing emotion as you would normally see. Additionally, the parents in the family unit, so whether it's two men or two women or a man or woman, they sometimes will get their stress getting in the way of what's making decisions about what's best for the child. So their ability to use their prefrontal cortex, the planning, executive thinking, to be able to, determine, pros and cons and which is better, that doesn't work because they're under high stress as well. So you can imagine what a situation would be like where everybody is dysregulated in the family. It would be a really difficult time in so many different areas, you know, work, school, home. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What led you to be interested in doing research on divorce?
I need a dissertation topic, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be doing my treatment practicum. I'm a doctoral student at Adler University. I'm going to be doing my treatment practicum at Allison Jones and Associates, which is a team of therapists that provide services to, I guess, everybody in the Vancouver Lower Mainland area. Mm-hmm. And they have a program called the Family Forward Reunification Therapy Program. And
what is it called?
I think it's spectacular. Family Forward?
Okay.
Reunification Therapy?
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's a team approach. There's, you know, there's a therapist that talks to the parents individually, and sometimes as a couple. There's a therapist that talks to the children, each of them. And there's also somebody who coordinates all of the therapy together. So the therapy isn't disjointed. Every week that team meets to discuss specifically that family and how to best help them. And it's such an interesting program. It's nothing like that, like anywhere that I could find. So I think it's really super interesting. So that's kind of what led me to, okay, well, if there is this program, and I guess there's a lot of legally referred clients, but any divorced family that has become maybe estranged from their child, or just basically to work on the parent-child relationship, I thought, well, I need to know a little bit about who would be coming in here before I thought I'd work with them. So, and I also wanted to know what is the status of, you know, the mediation programs in Canada.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I got it from.
If a family is going through divorce, what are things that they can do to protect the family?
Well, there's a lot of things you can do, actually, and a lot of research backing up what you can do. So I'll kind of go through a couple and then you let me know how, if you have any questions.
Yeah.
So one of the protective factors is that if there is divorce, that the standard of living between each of the homes doesn't decline. So sometimes what we see is there is one that a person that stays in the home, and then one person that goes elsewhere, often with not the same amount of money or resources.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have a disparity. So that when the children are visiting, it's very different, and then creates an imbalance, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And also how children do in divorce is contingent, I guess, in some ways, on how well the parents adjust to the disruption. You know, they're looking to their parents to see how they're going to react. And, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, the children get used in as pawns. And, again, it's not effective if you want healthy, characteristics of children.
So what you're saying is for parents to find ways to manage their emotions so that can minimize the emotional impact of the divorce on the children?
Very well said.
And then the first point you said, I didn't quite follow, so you said the standard of living does not decline?
That's right.
So then
so to be able to maintain an equal standard of living, if possible, but if, yes, so that's, I mean, I'm telling you protective factors, and this is all in a perfect world,
in an ideal situation, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Because, you know, I saw a lot of, I used to see anyway, in my previous position, you know, a lot of mothers, single mothers with low income. And that's one of the things that often keeps women in the relationships, right? Particularly if they haven't had stable employment before. So, yeah, so what you're saying is if they somehow can find ways to, for the woman or the men too, I guess, to be financially independent, that will also help with the disparity.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot of people need to recognize that giving, agreeing to give money or share assets to the other parent, you're not just giving it to the parent, you're giving it to the child or children. And I think really that really needs to be said. And people need to hear it because it's true. Your child would be better off if your partner is better off.
No, I think that's a really good point, Jasidi, because I've seen how some men really, or some women too, but I guess men, in providing child support or spousal support, they're really hesitant to do that because they don't want the ex-wife to benefit so much and run off with another man. And yet to think of a higher purpose of that is to ensure comfort for your children.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The way I think about it is, you know, you have the one person in the family that's kind of like has a big, huge hug around the entire family, whether that's, you know, the husband or the wife or whoever. And when there's a divorce, the half the family, let's say, for illustration, moves away, that father has to extend his arms and still keep the family together. And I think one of the things that's happening is, you know, he doesn't see, he, you know, hands off, right? Like, okay, we're not together anymore. Well, you still want your family. You still want your children to be raised well and for them to do well. And I think if we can, you know, really encourage people even to talk about it, how important it is, you know, in divorces, that there is this other concept that people sometimes don't think about. So,
So earlier you talked about managing emotions. What might be some of the things that parents can do to manage the emotions with regard
coming
to divorce?
From divorce?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things actually that's worked quite well is keeping a journal. So for communications between the two parents, and this depends on their age, of course, because there are digital options, but writing down whatever they need to communicate and just sending it in the child's backpack or whatever, you know, and having respectful rules around that, because sometimes it can get nasty. But in general, it's a good way for them to communicate that they don't actually have to speak to each other where that emotion is so high. I think that's another piece too, is that recognizing a person's emotions. So if the husband or wife needs to start giving attention to what emotions they are feeling, because a lot of times people don't do this and they don't know where their emotions are coming from, and it's very difficult to choose to express them or not when you don't know they're there. And what's important about this is that when you recognize, or when he's going to recognize or she's going to recognize, the how important recognizing the anxiety or the whatever feeling they're feeling when they're going to talk to the other partner, then just to not talk to the other partner, or, you know, give some time. You know, this is not a good time. Can we, you know, talk in 3 hours? You know, that sort of thing. So just recognizing that that you're not likely to have a productive conversation if you're highly emotionally aroused in any way.
One of the things I also notice is, you know, a lot of time people can argue about kind of seemingly a pseudo issue, right? So which parents can pick up the child and when in fact maybe it's more than about that. It could be they feel controlled, or they feel frustrated because of you know what I mean. Often the two parents fight about pseudo issues or issues that they think is about the child, when in fact it's mostly about their own emotional struggles or baggages that they fight.
Absolutely. Yeah, you nailed that. The control is a big piece of it. Is that, again, when parents are divorcing and they're doing this behavior, like, again, like fighting over pickup times, drop-off times, like, and maliciously, not just mm-hmm. trying to organize. It really is about control. It's not about the children. Yeah. So they're not acting in the best interest of their children when they're having these kind of, issues. Also, there's a couple other reasons why they might be, fighting over these issues. Mm-hmm. One of the parents or both of the parents they're both hurt, mm-hmm. and they either need their children to feel whole mm-hmm. or feel better or share in the hurt,
yeah.
Or they are resentful and they want to, not have the other person
yeah.
win in any way. There's also another one that that comes up as well is the fear of losing
mm-hmm.
the children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things that we were talking about, is that when emotions get high, you're not able to think as well on a complicated level, let's just say.
Mm-hmm.
And when a person is really, really activated by being fearful of losing their kids, you can imagine that the ability to think things through clearly would be very difficult for that person and can kind of perseverate and get bigger than it really needs to be.
Yeah.
I mean, there definitely is times where, that there is a possibility of a, a parent taking the kids away,
yeah.
but it's really a low percentage
mm-hmm.
Of times. And, knowing that there's other, like you said, these are just pseudo issues for feelings that people have. And so that's another reason why it's a really good idea just to check in with yourself about, when you're feeling,
mm-hmm.
Anxious or even happy. Just noticing those
yeah.
will allow you to be able to deal better in any conflict situation, actually.
Mm. Yeah, no, like you talk about emotional awareness, right? So recognizing I'm feeling anxious right now, why is that? Is it about fear of losing my child, or is it about something else?
Exactly.
Related to the parent. So what might be other protective factors?
So obviously not involving the children in disputes mm. is one of them.
Yeah, that's tricky, isn't it? Because I often see parents alienating another parent.
You see that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about how the standard of living doesn't decline.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping with that, keeping as much stability as possible. So moving different cities, or changing schools or anything else, if that can be avoided,
yeah.
It's very much helpful for the child because they're only then dealing with one change.
Mm.
And even though it's a huge change, they still have other areas in which they can control.
Yeah.
And they feel, comfortable in. And also the research does say that not introducing new partners too early.
I was going to ask you about that because that's a big thing, isn't it? Because there's, once you leave a relationship, there's that urge to have new relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell us more about that.
Well, I don't really have a ton to say about that other
yeah.
than, there has to be,
mm-hmm.
I don't have the amount of time, but, it's got to be a period of time in which the family can adjust mm-hmm. to their new dynamics and for the children to feel that they belong and that they're safe. Because one of the things that happens as well with children is that if the parents, when the parents break up, the children sometimes interpret it as, daddy left me. Is mom going to leave me too?
Mm.
So they get, pretty upset about that. And that's not something that they would maybe be able to even articulate,
yeah.
but it is, a primal fear of being abandoned and not being able to take care of, obviously, of oneself and missing the parents.
So lots of reassurance from the parents.
Absolutely, And telling the truth as well, as much as developmentally appropriate.
Yeah.
But, if you are lying to your children and they're finding out, if they're just little lies, you got to remember that you're trying to build them up, and they need to be able to trust you in order to come to you with things, or trust what you say so that they can follow what you say, knowing that, you've been honest in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's lots of things to consider in that way. There's also, the parents also have to engage in authoritarian parenting. What that means is that there's not a brick wall parent or a jellyfish parent that gives everything that a child wants. And sorry, brick wall is more like no to everything. It's somewhere in the middle where you're respecting the child because they are people too, and setting appropriate boundaries and following up with those boundaries is super important. One of the things that we're trying to do as parents is raise our children up to be adults. So in terms of teaching them things throughout their childhood, those lessons are going to be kept for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So being able to have boundaries is really important. If, let's say, a child grows up with having everything said yes to, like there's no such thing as no in the house, it'd be very difficult to go into a workplace and have a boss tell them anything and be successful, because they haven't learned that. It's not a skill that they were able to practice in a safe environment.
Can you talk more about the brick wall and the jellyfish? So for parents, what might that look like? Because I think that's a really good analogy.
Yeah, there's a book called, it's not a great title, but it's a great book, Systematic Training for Effective Parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by Dinkmeyer and Dinkmeyer.
Mm.
And it explains basically really simple parenting suggestions that is, you can read it at the end of the day, and it's not hard to read. It's grade 5 level it's written in.
Yeah.
So it's really, you can just read a little snippet of it and get a piece of information that you maybe can use going forward. And one of the things that they do talk about is, being the jellyfish, the person that doesn't have any rules, everything has been said yes to, really, wants their kids to like them even more than is typical. And then the brick wall is that person. And a lot of times the mothers actually get put into this role, that fathers will go to work and they'll come home and they'll be the jellyfish. So they'll give whatever to their children. It's all good. You want to do this, that, and the other thing. Okay, I'm the hero. And then the mom is there, and she's the one that needs to set boundaries. But what happens is that when there's that dynamic, they both get pulled into a very strong position that's really not healthy for the children.
Yeah.
And so that's why you kind of have to come in the middle where you do have boundaries and you do have rules and consequences that are respectful of the family, the children, relationships.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Some parents, they feel guilty because of the divorce, and so they like to make up to the children by letting them do different things or having few rules, right? And I think men more likely to feel guilty too, so they
For sure.
They spoil their children with material things.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the thing is, too, it's remember that it's coming from guilt, so it's coming from him or her spoiling the kids. It's not for the kids.
Yeah.
It's for them to relieve their guilt and guilt and anxiety issues around, having a family that has gone through divorce. And so, again, in terms of checking in with yourself, is You know, am I doing this for the kids or am I doing this for me? Mm. And who owns this problem?
Yeah.
And if it's the kids, then maybe you can help them. And but if it's coming from you, then maybe, you know, it's time for you to get your own resources in order to deal with the divorce.
Mm. And now I'd like to share with you a very touching clip. It's called Voice of the Child of Divorce. Here is the clip.
Dear Mom and Dad, I know that you are hurting. I'm hurting too. I feel and feed off your tension, fear, and shock. Although I am young and cannot express verbally what is happening in our lives, I'm still feeling the impact. My heart is broken every time I have to give up a parent. My sense of security is lost. Please don't assume that I am resilient. Please don't assume that my life will be exactly as it was, and that I will continue to feel the same love from both of you. I am a human being just like you. My needs are just like yours. I need love, attention, nurturing, stability, consistency, affection, understanding, patience, and mostly to be wanted. When you fight over me or put me in the middle of your argument, you are sending me the message that winning with each other is more important than my life. I am learning from you that it is better to be right than to be loved. You are teaching me that I came from a person who is unlovable and wrong, and that I am somehow wrong too. When you confide your hurt in my heart, you are storing up adult pain and robbing me of my childhood. You are taking away my belief that love is unconditional and replacing it with a message that tells me to become hard and not to love because I will get hurt and not be able to recover. You may not understand this today, and I am so small that you are not thinking about my future, but you are putting me at a greater risk of getting a divorce myself. At times, you are risking my safety to fill a void in your heart. My safety is your job. Without you and your protection, I am unshielded from the world. This will manifest in irrational fears for me, because I will stay in a state of fight or flight for most of my life. Someday, this initial shock will wear off, but how you choose to parent me through this crisis will never wear off. I will either feel your sense of selflessness, support, protection, or I will have a scar on my heart with a message that reads, "Good things happen to good people. I must be bad." Thoughtfully, the child of divorce.
Now, I'll continue with the interview with Jasidi Karpiok, a registered clinical counselor who is currently doing research on divorce. So, can you tell us a bit about divorce mediation and what might be some pros and cons about that?
Yeah, this is a thing that is kind of a little bit frustrating for somebody who wants to research it.
Mm.
Again, because I'm doing my dissertation, not because I love research.
Yeah.
But there are so many different types of divorce mediation programs. There's no set protocol for what a divorce mediation program would look like.
Mm.
So, you know, there's all these studies that, you know, divorce mediation programs work well, but, you know, other studies that say that don't work well. And, you know, this is confounded by the whole, they are not even the same realm of what they're measuring.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then also there's a big piece of, you know, just the families bringing diversity into that. So some people are more resilient and some people have more resources set up. And so you could see how that would affect how the program would work or how efficient or effective it might be.
Mm-hmm. So what might be some advantages for divorce mediation?
There is some research to say, actually, that it's way less expensive
mm-hmm.
Than going the legal route.
Yeah.
And that makes sense if you think about how much money it can add up mm-hmm. in court. And that's another thing that's really frustrating too is working with families. It's just, it's, you're going to lose more money into the court than what you would doing, you know, family therapy or just fuddling.
Yeah.
But it's often about the revenge or wanting to hurt or that feeling, again, acting out of those emotions without considering, having that forethought. It just, it makes a mess of everything, basically.
Yeah.
And, in terms of, too, of mediation, it's, you know, you're both getting your needs met, maybe not as much as you would like, but you're both somewhat getting your needs met. But if you go to court, you have to listen to whatever the judge says.
Mm.
And that means, you know, usually it means, you know, somebody's a winner and somebody's a loser.
Yeah.
Or basically having the judge determine what's best for your family. So setting up maybe a schedule of child care that's not convenient at all for you and probably possibly not convenient for the other partner either. Or the children. It could be all sorts of things, whatever the judge says is.
Mm.
Whereas in the mediation, you actually have more room to
compromise,
you know, mediate,
and negotiate. Yeah.
Negotiate.
Uh-huh. And so when does divorce mediation not work?
Oh, probably all the things that we were talking about earlier. You know, if parents are still... still trying to hurt each other and not realizing the hurt of the child, that they are involving the children in disputes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your dad is, you know, not very nice and such, you know, the messages back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, mediation will also not work if you introduce a romantic partner too early, because that can, again, bring those emotions right back up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so basically, if you're coming from the point of a parent, it's really, you got to, you know, see through their eyes with your brain, essentially. Like, what are they going to need? So they need to see that people can end relationships well.
Mm.
And again, going back to whatever lessons children learn in as a child come out and they've learned them and they repeat the patterns as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
If they are in a situation in which, let's say, two partners are deciding to split the company.
Yeah.
The skills that were modeled to them will likely come into play when there's a divorce in terms of relationship, let's say, in this business. So basically, you know, you do really have to parent the way that you want your children to be as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, again, keeping in mind appropriate boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you want them to be respectful to people, you have to show them that you're respectful. And again, everybody has mistakes. I'm not saying people have to be perfect parents. It's just realizing that what a child sees you do becomes the standard of what is.
Mm-hmm. And so are there anything that you are surprised in doing the research about divorce?
I was actually just surprised, actually, about the family mediation program, that there wasn't sort of any research on, like a standard of research, of what therapy programs, what they are. What's interesting to me is that these judges are, appointing different programs, asking that the family needs to go, that the family goes there. And there's no research to back up the program.
Mm.
So, yeah, I was really surprised about that, is that, you know, this is such a big part of our culture. The divorce is part of our culture.
Yeah.
or even common law divorce as well. And there's not these things in place that are regulated mm-hmm. in some way, because ultimately, if there are services and supports for families that are going through this, everybody will be better off. You know, the parents are going to be performing better at work, presumably, and the children are going to get the lessons that they need to grow up and be part of a healthy community. Mm-hmm. So there's just so many different things that get affected by these things that happen in our lives early on, that we as parents can help our children grow to be a certain, have characteristics that we're proud of and skills that we're proud of.
Are there any standards of training?
No, that's what I'm saying. There's not. And the thing is, too, is that there's another piece is that, you know, there's not every family needs the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? So that's another problem with it. I believe Allison is going to be putting in some measures for her program, as was suggested, in order to get actually data from the people that are going through the program. So,
who tend to be these divorce mediators? Are they therapists? Are they sort of more coming from a legal perspective?
Yeah, there's all sorts.
Really?
Yeah, and there's people that were lawyers and are now counselors, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's all different kinds of people that can help. But the problem is access, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, they may be available, but are they really available in terms of do they have even space available to see you or how much is it, and can I afford that? You know, those kind of things. Is that yes? There's, you know, there's resources available, but no, you can't access them, right?
So, what would be your take-home message in terms of for parents if they are either considering or going through divorce?
I guess maybe thinking about it more through their children's eyes about what they would be seeing and acting in a way that would be consistent to the lessons that you want your child to learn. So again, you know, we talked about, you know, you're growing an adult, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever messages and skills and attributes the child gains from their youth will carry over into their adulthood. So you want a child to be able to handle conflict well. You want a child to be able to cease to be part of a relationship in whatever way, whether it's work or school or businesses, in a way that is still respectful and, you know, doesn't have conflict. So these things that you want for your children, you know, a lot of times I get parents to, you know, write out, what is all the things that you want your child to be? You know, like, what kind of attributes, what, you know, all of those, you know, they often have a huge, huge list.
Yeah.
And then we go into it and we're like, well, what do they have to learn now in order to get there?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we work on. That's the treatment plan.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jasdy, and it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Yes, thank you so much.
And that was Jasdy Kapiok, a registered clinical counselor who shared some of what she has found in her research on divorce. Go to her website, buildingstrengths.ca. And before I end the show tonight, I will share with you another clip that features a panel of experts on divorce.
With me as a panel of experts, I've got Marilyn Chinitz. She is a partner with Blank Roan and also a celebrity divorce attorney. Next to her is Paula Levy, licensed marriage and family therapist and mediator. Next to Paula is Vicky Volper, collaborative attorney and mediator in Westport. And also we want to welcome Haley Rockwell, managing director for LLBH Private Wealth Management in Westport. Hi, Haley. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tonight we want to ask our panel, what are the critical pieces of advice you would want to give a woman who is going through divorce or maybe considering it? So I'd like to start with Haley, since you're new to the panel.
All right. Even if women aren't going through the divorce process, I always say get involved in your finances early. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of women think that either they're not equipped to, or they're not good at numbers, or their husband's the one that does the mm-hmm. finances. Mm-hmm. And it's just plain not true. Women are really good at managing their finances. They're diligent. They're willing to commit to a process. They're not making rash decisions. They're actually really good at both the financial piece of running the household finances, but also with the investment piece. So I say get involved and get involved early.
That is a great piece of advice. Ladies, every age, no matter what, please get to know your family finances. Know the passwords. Just be aware, know where the assets are, and you don't really want to be having to look for this in a crisis, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a divorce. So it's really very, very important advice. So Marilyn, we'll start with you. From a litigator standpoint, what would you suggest a woman who is just thinking about or starting down this journey?
Well, I think that was the best advice you can give, and I think you started early. Mm-hmm. Marriage is a partnership. That's mm-hmm. how you started. And so as a partner, if you were going into business, you wouldn't allow your other partner to just take over everything and sit in the corner and not know what's going on. So that's from the beginning. When the divorce starts, or if you're contemplating divorce, you want to be able to get all the information that you can before the action starts. You want to have a real understanding of what assets you have so you can make appropriate decision. Mm-hmm. Where are the accounts? How much are in the accounts? Speak to people. There's nothing illegal about doing your due diligence and mm-hmm. finding out before you make that announcement that you're ready for a divorce. And if you're blindsided by mm-hmm. a divorce and you don't have time to prepare, surround yourself with really good experts, because those are the people that are going to navigate these waters and get you to where you need to be. Mm-hmm. And those are people that you have to trust. So it's a good financial advisor. It's a good attorney, first and foremost. A therapist, if needed. Mm-hmm. Therapist, someone to speak to concerning issues relating to your children, how to approach it with the children, not just throw a bomb out to them. Yes. And you have to be mindful that you are affecting a lot of other people's lives. Mm-hmm. So when you're making decisions, like any good president of a company or president of the country, they garner up and they bring good people and they surround themselves with good people who are educated, who can give them advice. Don't charge into anything. Think before you make mm-hmm. the next step, and really understand what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And don't act necessarily just on the emotion. Mm. Be logical and
very
be smart thinking about what you're doing.
Yeah, great advice. Surround yourself with good people. Maybe take a little time if you can, if you're not blindsided perhaps. And take care of yourself. And speaking of that, Paula Levy, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist, maybe there's an emotional component that you might really want to pay attention to. What do you suggest?
Well, I know that a lot of times when people come in, they are concerned about their children and they're concerned mm-hmm. about the well-being of their family. And I think that there are many things that people can do to lessen the impact on the children especially. Obviously, one of the ways is to get expert advice as to how to tell the children what to look for as to what's normal and when to be concerned, when to get experts' help for your children. But there's also different ways that you can approach it. For example, we find that people who mediate learn to communicate a little bit better so that they're able to face mm-hmm. each other at the graduations and birthday parties and weddings because they haven't had that adversarial experience. So if you can work it out, if you can make it a non-adversarial situation, we find that's really helpful as well. Mm-hmm. And
terrific.
Also, finally, your own health is the most important thing for your children as well. If you're doing okay, if you're taking care of yourself, they really pick that up as well, and they usually do better if you're doing better.
Absolutely. I love that. So take care of yourself. And of course, many of us are, the first thing we get worried about is our kids and their well-being and making the right choices. And if we don't go after each other in an adversarial way, you set the stage for life going forward, and there will be birthdays and weddings and whatnot. So Vicki, any more thoughts on that, or more critical advice for that woman who is considering this big move?
Trevor, I would advise a woman who is considering divorce to be educated about the various methods of divorce. Mm-hmm. It is very important to make an informed, educated decision about whether you need a litigator, whether you could mediate, or whether you might want to do collaborative divorce, which is sort of a hybrid process where you advocate for yourself, but you're in a settlement mode as mediation. Mm-hmm. The non-adversarial methods tend to allow people to maintain more control of the divorce process and to save a heck of a lot of money. Mm. And so one of the financial decisions you're going to have to make, can you afford to litigate? Mm-hmm. Is it worth litigating? Or can you save money by not litigating? Mm-hmm. It really depends. It's a very individual case-by-case decision. Mm-hmm. And people should know the different processes and make an informed decision.
I want you to, I think that was an excellent point, as I do your point, which is that if you do well, your children do well. There's no question. But I also think that just because you're a litigator doesn't mean that you don't look to amicably resolve a case. Mm-hmm. And it may not be mediation, because in mediation you don't have your own attorney, you have one person, a mediator. In the collaborative process, you each have your own attorney. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that even as a litigator, it's almost like that extra weapon that you keep behind your back. Mm-hmm. But you come to a bargaining table and you come to the negotiation process with the same intent, which is to come out with a solution that works for everybody. Through the process of discussion and disclosure, sometimes having the threat of a court behind you makes people a little more forthcoming,
right?
And they're not inclined to hide because they know that you ultimately can, there's a cause and effect. But
you mentioned something a little earlier off camera. Marilyn was talking about how there are folks who really don't want their finances open in court, where their competitors now can really see what's happening in their private lives. And that's another good reason not to.
In Connecticut, the financial disclosure can be in open court because you have hearings. So if you're going to bring a support application, it could be heard by a courtroom of people. And it's very private information that you don't necessarily want out there. If you're working with a big hedge fund or you are a big corporate person, you don't want your income out there. It may not be as big as everybody thinks it is. And so there's lots of reasons why you may not want it. There's also proprietary information, and that might be out in the public. So if you're wise and you're smart, you want to resolve those things. But sometimes, unless people feel the threat of demise, they're not coming with the objective of trying
they
to.
They need a little push.
You need a little push.
Put it that way.
And that's just human nature.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that litigators are terrible. We're not creating the problems. We're looking for the solutions. And if people can't make their own solutions, arrive at their own solutions, then we have a process to do that. That's not a bad process. It's a lengthy process. It could be a costly process. But clients drive that process.
And you need to have clients that are not hiding assets, who are really willing to be open to do the right thing. And I'm sure Haley has seen this, which is those folks who really haven't been upfront in the divorce process, and it gets to be messy, and then they end up with dealing with this situation.
Haley could probably speak best to the fact that a lot of these transactions have issues that really require an expertise. There's tax implications, there's estate issues, setting up trusts.
For children.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of complicated areas that while everybody would like to agree to, it really takes the expertise of someone like Haley who can really give that information and provide that information.
Yeah, I mean, Fairfield County, we have a lot of private equity firms, a lot of hedge funds, so people have a lot of illiquid assets. You don't get monthly statements on them, so you've got to know where to find the information on what those assets are and how much they're worth, because it's not immediately clear that the value is what's on that statement. So you really do need some help. If somebody owns a business, has an ownership interest in a business, how do you value that? It's tricky. And so there is a point at which you need to have some outside expertise.
I would point out, though, that in mediation and collaborative divorce, there is a role for outside experts. We have brought into both mediation and collaborative divorce people like Haley to advise the couple. Usually, instead of one person representing the husband and one the wife, one person like you would be a neutral to advise the couple fairly, right, instead of from an adversarial perspective.
Well, we've had a very interesting conversation. I had this wonderful panel of experts. There are some critical pieces of information here, which is, to Marilyn's point, surround yourself with great experts, people who really understand. You can hire Haley, for example, who can really show you and walk you through what's going on. You would really need to know what the finances are, know where your assets are ahead of time. Don't do it in the middle of a crisis, so start working on that now. Know the passwords. I've heard horror stories about these things. And then, of course, to Paula's point, you know, this is about your family. There's a huge ripple effect. How you handle the way you treat one another, and if you do it fairly, you can live together, you can go to those weddings and those graduations without having a terrible disconnect and sort of ugly feelings. And believe me, the kids feel that stuff. It's not good. I've been there. So, you know, best advice, go with all this great advice. Get yourself surrounded by good people, including a good therapist, a great financial advisor, either a litigator or a mediator, depending on your situation, and just get yourself prepared, and hopefully you'll transition without too much horror and drama.
This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour, hosted by Quinle Erickson, every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. For more information about Quinn, visit www.quinle.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and you have a beautiful, restful sleep. Good night.